Hello and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also called H, and joining me for the first time in a long time, for the first time all year, let's say,
it's true.
Is our good friend Q.
Hi there, H. It's so good to be here.
Now, we have finalized our divorce papers. We just didn't want to put the audience in between our constant bickering and throwing furniture and, you know, because we want you to be character witnesses at our eventual trial as we fight for the Playwright estate.
Yes, this podcast is kind of deep inside of a custody battle. Honestly, I think the thing that makes our divorce a little bit different from other divorces is it is indeed the listener's fault in this particular case. I mean, we just couldn't, you guys are pulling us in two directions and we couldn't bear to both love you and each other. So, you know, it is what it is. New year, it's going to be a little weird, a little different.
Especially you know who you are. We're not gonna embarrass you in front of everyone else, but you know what you did.
Yeah, and you know that you've definitely written in a few times, and maybe you didn't ever write in, but that's definitely you that we're thinking of.
Yeah, and also welcome to all the new listeners. We picked up a few around the new year, and this is maybe the first you're hearing of both of the regular hosts on the show, because we've each kind of covered for each other as we've been out on assignment.
I think that last week's episode, was that the first episode ever of this show without you?
No, there was the one that you did with Pear and IGN.
Okay. So, but surely the second episode. So it is, you were extremely consistent. I've certainly missed episodes over the years.
You've missed like three or four. That's still,
I know. Well, hey, we're keeping the streak alive and we march on to another year of video game ideas.
We've not yet missed a week. So see how long we can hold on to that.
Yeah, for people who have listened to last week's episode, you will know that I'm so glad H is back, because my transitions need some work in between some of these games. So I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed, save me, sir.
Well, speaking of transitions, this is all going terribly wrong.
You're so rusty. We gotta retool this whole thing.
Let's go into some video game pitches. I guess since we've each been out for a little while, I'll go ahead and start us off with what is going to be a fairly simple pitch, but I'm hoping we can kind of build it into something. So what I want is a Bloodborne type game where it's an kind of a character action-y type game where you're fighting these Lovecraftian monsters, but they have randomized limbs, and they kind of like spore-like figure out what to do with each of those limbs, how they locomote, how they attack, how they look around themselves, and you can set the difficulty level based on how many limbs you want the enemy to have, and the more limbs, the more challenging it will be, or perhaps it will be easier because it's tripping over itself. I don't know. Let's figure it out. Let's start the clock.
I mean, this is really cool. I can see already in my head, we're talking about a random number of limbs. I almost want to add in like limb severing mechanics a la Dead Space or something.
I'm thinking instead of a random number of limbs, you can choose the number of limbs as like the difficulty slider. And then each of the limbs are like a different part of the body. So they could be arms, they could be blades, they could be heads, you know. And so based on how many heads it has, or how many arms it has, how many legs it has, it can try to figure out how to move that weird body around and how to attack you.
So do you imagine like you're also saying, I want to allow three heads, or I'm going to say that there can be three heads, or you're just saying, hey, any 20 will do?
Well, that's the thing, is that if you say you want three openings from the central body, you don't necessarily know what's going to populate those openings. You know, you don't necessarily know. It could be three arms. It could be three heads. It could be a mixture. It could be a perfect human being that emerges on the other side.
Okay. All right. So congratulations 1 week into 2019. And we have said the phrase, we don't know what will populate those openings. Okay. So it could be like, just like a weird roly three-headed thing out of three holes.
And it would have to figure out how to attack you. But, you know, with all those eyes, with all those ears, it would know exactly where you are.
That's true. Or maybe, like, because it's got so much brain power, it almost becomes, like, psionic. It can kind of float
or
something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it could use psychic powers, maybe.
Yeah. So multiple brain powers is going to get you, like, a creature that's doing a lot of floating and phasing.
Okay,
and maybe
I'm into that.
Mind control sort of stuff. I was also thinking that one of these monstrosities, if the limbs are kind of crazy and long and kind of spidery in different ways, then you could have potentially in these Bloodbornean sort of arenas, different weapons potentially that are on the ground or like are mounted up on places. And this thing can, if it can wiggle its way over, can pick up a weapon with one of its limbs and suddenly that thing's wielding something.
Maybe it would need a certain amount of brain power to be able to understand how weapons work. And so as it achieves more heads, not only would it develop psychic powers, but it would also gain a more, I'm going to say human-like, because we're talking Lovecraftian, we're talking things that are kind of above humans, but a more intelligent understanding of its environment and how to use it against you.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So this thing is ambling around. I imagine that I would like the idea of some kind of modifier. Maybe there's like the default, instead of you choosing, is like you level up in the game from like 1 to 50. And as you level, like that's how many limbs characters start spawning with or something.
Yeah, I mean, whether you can choose or whether you can, it's based on how much of the game you've previously beaten. I also see potential in like a seed type system like you would get in the Binding of Isaac or the Hexcel's Infinite, where if you find a boss monster that you think works particularly well, then you can send that seed across Twitter and then people can just input those numbers and letters and it can kind of randomly generate that same monster for everyone to fight.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So you're like, as you defeat these monsters, maybe you're writing down things about them in your notebook. So like, not only do you get the monster itself, but you get a kind of, I'm almost thinking in my head weirdly, like a Great British Baking Show style sketch of that monster in your journal.
I don't
along
know if
with
I've
this.
Watched enough of the Great British Baking Show. You might have to walk me through that one.
So essentially they're always like, one person will be like, I'm going to go create a bread lion. And then, and I apologize to everybody from the Caden Ritz podcast for that accent.
I don't think we have any crossover listeners, probably.
And then they essentially, the narrators take over and they're saying, Jim is going to make us a bread lion and it's going to look like this and this. And they do like a really nice detailed illustration. I'm sure if you Google Great British Baking Show illustrations, you'll see a bunch of results. Okay. But while you're doing that, I can imagine like this notebook becomes almost like a generated sketchbook based on like the creatures that you've encountered. And maybe it even like very lightly pencils in some of the environment in which you fought them. So you almost like end the game with the storybook of the different creatures you encountered in that sort of iteration of your character or something.
Okay. Yeah, you can kind of keep like a, or maybe even a, like a trophy room that you can walk through. Maybe you keep trophies from each of them, or maybe there's a little kind of sketch or a miniature statue or something that you can kind of show off to your friends.
So I want to return for a moment to the idea of kind of limb severing. If we submit that the more limbs, the more dangerous these things become, which is maybe not necessarily true. If we submit that that's true, then maybe we need to find some way of like gaining the upper hand. I'm thinking of myself with the switch axe inside of Bloodborne and like, what can I do with that thing to these creatures. I would hope that I could get a leg up by slowing them down in some way. Or is this intended to just be so difficult it's crazy?
I mean,
only in the most punishing way possible.
Yeah, I think there would probably be modifiers that you can set to. I want this to be kind of accessible for anyone at any level. But if you want the extra challenge, there's probably ways to make the environment more hostile towards you or give them a buff of some sort. But limb severing is cool. Obviously, Monster Hunter, you can use limbs against the enemies by making them into weapons. Maybe there's ways to, in Dark Souls, you could sever dragon tails to turn them into weapons. You know, I think there's room to experiment with, you know, each of those are kind of post-battle preparations that you would make. Mm. Like once you defeated the enemy, then you can take that tail that you cut off to a blacksmith and he can forge an axe or something. Maybe you can actually sever a limb and then pick that up in the course of the battle and then start, I guess, wailing against the enemy with it.
Yeah, if there were different, not just limb types, but limb properties, like one is just like a really sticky, like spider hand or something like that, and then, or spider leg.
Does whatever a spider can.
Does what a spider hand. If you had stuff like that, then you could potentially do something where just because a creature got, you know, some critical mass number of those sort of sticky limbs that they naturally can kind of amble up walls or, you know, kind of stick to things or grab things potentially, or like the toughest bond you'd probably get is like opposable thumbs, right? That's the dreaded fear of any combatant. Oh no, it can actually grab things.
Maybe the fewer heads that it has, if it doesn't have any heads, then the brain that is necessary to control the creature in the first place for it to be a living creature is kind of distributed throughout the body. So as you sever those limbs, almost like the thing, it takes on autonomy. And so if you cut off an arm, then all of a sudden you have two enemies to deal with, an arm that is trying to kill you and the rest of the body that's still trying to kill you.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I wonder if there's like also if every creature, like one of the limbs is randomly this like the like key to the creature. And so like severing the right limb, or maybe it's they all always have a head. And if you can like sever the head, you can kind of disable the creature in that way, especially if you have multiple of different things coming at you at the same time. You might need of like, okay, I can quickly dispatch of this one because I have the right weapon that can kind of get around a series of hands or something like that.
That's cool. Let's go ahead and stop that one there before it grows out of control.
Before it so, fills the holes.
That's right, with limbs. So let's come up with a name for that. I, unsurprisingly, did not come in with anything because I had no idea where this one would go. And I'm glad with the direction that it did.
You feel like the name Limb probably should be in there somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. I'm trying to think of words that rhyme with that. There's Rim, which doesn't really give us a lot.
Slim.
Limb job or Sky Limb.
Sky Limb, gross. I almost wonder if there's like an additional, like using limb as part of another word.
There's a limber.
Limber.
Which would describe.
Limbitless.
What was that?
That would be limbitless.
What does that mean?
That would be limitless.
Okay.
Limbs. Okay, it's a stretch, or I'll admit it.
Or we can call it limb biscuit.
Ooh, okay. Well, hey, why not? We've already gone there, so.
Because it's like the Great British Baking Show, which apparently has these kinds of Lovecraftian monstrosities. I don't know.
Today, H is preparing for us a limb biscuit.
Oh, it feels good to be back.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think that'll work. Q, why don't you take us into whatever you're going to introduce us to today?
I love it when we end up, because people that don't know, a little behind the scenes here, we don't know what each other is going to pitch when we go into the show. So it's always a surprise. But I love it when we come with a 1-2 punch. I have a contrasting idea, I think. I was thinking about I recently played through Florence on iOS. Mm-hmm. and really loved the experience, the story of it, and what they did with the mobile platform. And I thought it would be really interesting to maybe recreate another type of story with that. And that would be the story of owning like a family-run small business, like a general store or something, maybe potentially a restaurant. Kind of the story progresses, business booms, a big box, maybe chain restaurant or big box retailer moves in across the street, and you kind of slowly lose the business. And then maybe, you know, you end it sad, or maybe you can end with like the son getting the keys or the daughter getting the keys from the parent, and then they kind of revitalize it as a hipster spot or something like that. So Florence is so much about all the little interactions along the way, so I was thinking we could maybe go through some different moments and find different interactions that could be fun, but I'm willing to take this anywhere. That's the pitch.
Now, you said 1-2 punch as if they were going to have anything to do with each other.
Well, no,
did
I guess
you just mean it's like an opposite type thing.
It is a total, yeah, exactly. You are doing red and I am doing blue.
I see. Or... okay, cool. Let's start the clock and see where that gets us. So Florence, for those who aren't, I guess, well into the mobile gaming scene, because that has kind of developed into its own niche with maybe not a ton of crossover with console gamers and PC gamers, which is probably our primary audience, is a nice little story-based game that you play through the arc of a relationship, through the good and the bad, between these two characters, mostly playing out and interacting with these kind of small day-to-day moments, like brushing your teeth or choosing where to put your belongings when you're moving in with somebody else, that kind of thing. So, you know, instead of playing through the big moments, you're kind of experiencing the smaller, more intimate things. So, I guess from a mechanical perspective, that opens up a lot of doors. And, I mean, if anything, it almost kind of doesn't narrow it down enough. So like what aspects of the experience are you hoping to preserve?
So I'm glad you asked it. Just in case that question came up, I have provided myself at least 20 bullet points of potential moments that be fun.
Okay.
From
we only have 10 minutes here. So.
Exactly. So I'll just go through a few of them. I like the idea of maybe little drag and drop arrangements of stuff, of setting up your shop for the first time. Maybe it's an old building, so you have to clean it up. I like the idea of like having some sort of finger paintings of like making your own sign so that there's a little bit of a drawing in there. And it's like your contribution of that drawing kind of always ends up in the backdrop, or it ends up on like the t-shirts of the employees. So you get this very personal sort of feeling. But I think we could
do
stuff.
You want it to feel like, because this is ultimately a story of failure, you want to make it feel like each individual player is responsible for the failure of the business.
Yeah, right. Well, it should, I think that, you know, it is trying to tell a very common tale at this point of the American small business person. But the idea of a small business is often much more about a reflection of its owner and the people that run it than it is about just like the products and services that it offers. So, like the idea of making things where the player feels very invested or feels like theirs and giving them ownership. Like maybe there's one point where people are coming in for jobs and you get to like choose which employee gets hired. And then maybe, you know, towards the end of the story, you actually have to let your first employee go or something like that.
Okay.
So these people that you choose, and I have that kind of loose story of the thread, but I can imagine everything from Florence has a very, this is not very spoilery, but there is a great little fictionalization of her like doing her budget/finances. And it's just kind of this little spreadsheet where you're tapping numbers. It's kind of fun. I like the idea of having to like do your taxes or like tally your receipts and stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So there's aspects of like running the business. How can we morph those little experiences when the big business kind of rolls into town, because, you know, with, I don't know, maybe I want it to become kind of, to feel more chaotic or to feel more difficult, rather than, like, if you were managing, like, a budget, that would become a lot maybe easier when the big business comes in, because you have less numbers to deal with because everyone's going to the other store. So how do we kind of ramp up the tension at that point?
I think you could do something where if the budget is a series of numbers that you drag into a sheet and they kind of total a math equation, maybe intermittently throughout the story, you return to the mechanic of, like, running your numbers. You know, eventually you're just provided a set of numbers that are not going to add up to profit, right? So you experience that, like, man. And you could even drag and rearrange the numbers, and maybe you do some mechanic where those numbers can add up in one way, and then in other ways they can't add up. So you actually have the feeling of, oh man, no matter which way I arrange these things, I can't get it to be what I need it to be. And I also think it could be interesting to just incorporate the idea of, like, the crappy sort of circa 1998 to 2000, like, Windows computer that the person is, like, seeing a little article of, like, hey, guess who's moving in? It's the big guys or whatever. And, you know, going and seeing online reviews for them and they seem positive, or a scene where you maybe go to the big box store and you, like, walk across the aisles and they seem endless in a way.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of, like, what other ways, like, what could be the turning point other than, because you can watch it slowly dwindle, but I wonder if there's, I don't know, the equivalent of, like, a regular customer or something that can continuously appear, and then, like, the last time you see them, you get into an argument with them, or, like, the only thing
maybe they're the ones that open the franchise, you know, they're just trying to do the best for themselves and their family as well.
Or they come in to tell you that, like, they're working for that store or something, or one of your employees, like, says that they have to go, and then they end up working for the other store.
Yeah, that would be a good one, because, you know, you spend all the time training them and they're taking what they learned, and, you know, it's just a part of business. It's nothing personal.
Yeah, and the feeling of almost inevitability with it, and the refusal to change. Maybe you're, you know, you keep ordering the same products and stuff, and, like, people slowly tell you, oh, well, they've got this other thing over there. What that would feel like. I don't know if it's an argument with a customer, or if it is, like, going through your Yelp page and starting to see, like, negative reviews pile up, and, like, maybe you get to angrily reply to them in some way.
Okay.
I don't know. What other kind of, maybe we're running out of time, but what other sort of moments do you think could be either make you feel invested in the business through a mini game, or reflect, like, the state of something slipping away from you?
Just like Papers, Please did a good job of kind of humanizing the job by also showing you kind of what you were working towards, showing you the struggle back home, what you're actually using the money for. And so, you know, tying in aspects of this person's day-to-day life can go a long way to kind of fill out the rest of the story.
A couple other thoughts and ideas I've written down is, like, you can see the big box store from across the street, and, like, you slowly watch it get more and more full. There's a moment where you can, like, put sale stickers on things, and you're, like, forever increasing the price of the sale. Maybe there's, like, some very light sort of management to it, where, like, you're constantly finding the right balance of what customers are asking for price. So there could be, like, almost a idle game feeling of money is just rolling in and you're doing very little work, but, like, an idle game kind of becomes less and less work, where this would become potentially more and more work to get it to work until eventually it absolutely can't.
For now, we have to close this one down and come up with a name for our simulation of failure of the business.
Simulation of failure of a business. I know it's a little political to call it something maybe like Main Street USA, but maybe something like that. Something that is, like, very visually evocative, I would prefer.
Yeah, or even making it more personal, like if you were to call it the, like, Bungala's Deli or something like that, where
yeah,
you know, it really kind of ties it into the characters that you'd be playing as and the loss that they're experiencing.
I like that. And then, if especially if you have a family name, you can let the person, like, make the family sign, and maybe they get, like, a little font to pick from, and so it's a little bit more controlled. They won't just, like, doodle penis pictures all over it and ruin the whole damn game.
You know, they'll try anyways. The inevitable truth of video gaming.
It's true.
Right, well, let's see what the listeners have for us today. Our community submission today comes from Poditis, who says, following on what Q said about pitching sequels, I couldn't help myself to propose you guys tackle the long-awaited Half-Life 3. It'll be interesting to see where you take the plot and the mystery behind G-Man, and what interesting new mechanics you can come up with. I believe Valve hinted that the Portal and Half-Life world were interconnected, so maybe we would have seen the Portal gun in this game.
Okay, right.
Half-Life 3, 10 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Okay, first thing is first, I gotta, like, recap myself on what happened in Black Life. What happened in
Half-Life's Matter, all right? Let's get this right.
Oh no, we have to cut that whole thing. We can't put that on the air. Okay, so in Half-Life 2, what happens?
A recap of the series overall. Half-Life 1, Gordon Freeman's working as a theoretical physicist, and performs an experiment, or at least assists with an experiment, that opens a dimensional rift between
our world
and an alien world. And aliens come through and start attacking the humans, kind of take over the science lab, and military comes in to try to shut it all down. And Gordon is just in there trying to fight the aliens, fight the army, just try to come out alive on the other end. He ends up going to an alien world and fighting a large baby for some reason, and then kind of winds up in a stasis of some sort. He awakens many years later in Half-Life 2 to the beckoning of a mysterious G-Man who seems to look like a government representative but has kind of strange alien powers. He always ends up in strange places he shouldn't be and can seemingly control time and space.
Wake up,
in
Mr.
that
Freeman.
Society, there's kind of a universal, there's kind of like a governing body that has taken over.
Let's place people into, like, centers, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of an Orwellian type society where, you know, everyone is kept super poor and very poorly informed, while this kind of big brother booming voice kind of rings out through the cities. There is simultaneously, or I guess there was previous to the events of the game, an alien invasion, and you're not really sure whether the aliens have kind of installed this puppet government or whether they're just kind of forces battling against each other. It's not really sure, like, who's on whose side.
And then, of course, people are not having it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the aliens that you had freed from the Half-Life 1 accident that had been let out and had been alien or enemies in Half-Life 1 have become kind of integral parts of society as society has embraced them in the years following. So it's a lot to work with. There's hints at connections to Portal and that whole universe. Obviously, the Black Mesa Lab was referenced many times in Portal as being a rival studio, a rival laboratory to Aperture Labs, which is where Portal took place. And so you, as Gordon Freeman, are trying to kind of lead an uprising of citizens against kind of all of the powers that be, in a way.
Okay. First of all, spoiler alert for Half-Life 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, okay. So I'm trying to think of, like, the first decision to be made. Why don't we start the timer here, too? Of that recap doesn't count. The first decision to be made is, when do we set, right? Is it going to happen right as, like, Gordon is kicking off this thing, or should we do kind of a Star Wars and, like, jump to, you know, the rebellion's not going well or something like that?
Now, I seem to remember, and it's been a long time, but I seem to remember Half-Life 2, Episode 2, ending on kind of a cliffhanger. I remember you launch a garden gnome into space for some reason. But other than that, I'm not remembering all of the events at the end of Half-Life 2 Episode 2, which is the most recent Half-Life entry. And so I think you would kind of be beholden to wrapping up the story that those games set up of coming up with the conflict. All right, so the pieces that we have to work with is we've got the portal gun, which can open these kind of wormholes in space between two proximal spaces, allowing you to kind of travel between. There's the gravity gun, which can allow you to manipulate and pick up remotely objects in the environment, which is occasionally supercharged to be this kind of ultra, you know, laser gun weapon when they need a cathartic moment in these games. And there's the dimensional portal that opened in the first place. So maybe there's some aspect of, okay, here we go. This is an interesting pitch.
Okay.
There's an aspect of maybe you can combine the portal gun technology with the dimensional rift from Half-Life 1 to basically have in your hands a gun that can create dimensional rifts and can open portals between different worlds and different dimensions. And you can call that the steam gun, which kind of follows on with some of the naming conventions from the Half-Life series. And basically what it is it allows you, Gordon Freeman, to kind of like Bioshock Infinite, pulling in aspects from other time periods to pull in almost like they are alternate dimensions to the world he's living in, aspects and things from other games. You can cross into worlds from other games, and you're kind of jumping through this kind of grand exploration of video gaming, of games that are popular, games that are unpopular, and it almost turns Steam the Marketplace into a years-long ARG for Half-Life 3.
Oh my God. All right. That's cool. That frightens me. I like the idea of the interdimensional gun, and maybe there's like, I can think of it almost feeling like a Titanfall 2 sort of vibe, where it's maybe unstable at points and you're phasing through different dimensions or time periods. I mean, I feel like so much of Half-Life is defined by the physics of it, right? So I wonder if in different dimensions you could be dealing with different levels of gravity, or there are different rules to what certain, like if you bring Breath of the Wild style, like electricity and fire and wind and all those things together, that you can get those things to behave and manipulate. Like you open up a portal to another dimension where oxygen just burns as though it's fire, and then you can like put the other portal on the other side and like get this like strong gust of wind to like become a giant blast of fire to like fry enemies.
Okay, so maybe this is so even if we kind of abandon the idea of like incorporating all sorts of different video games, totally fine. If we
dual pitching you.
Let's continue to explore and see what we like. So we have a gun that can open rifts between dimensions, and maybe that is like, maybe you have like a super low health pool and you're pretty easily taken out, but you kind of always have this plan B option where you right click or you middle click or however you access the portal gun, and that allows you to kind of escape into a different world, or, you know, at least open a portal to another world. You can drop enemies into it. You can use it to escape and hope that you're going to go into a better world. And it has not ammo, but it has like a cooldown type thing where, you know, one of the nerdy things in Star Wars is people always took issue with Han Solo saying that he made the Kessel Run in, you know, a certain number of parsecs instead of a certain amount of time. which, you know, is a measurement of distance. But people always said that, oh, you know, it takes a certain amount of computer power to calculate what would be a safe route through, you know, this amount of space. And it actually is, you know, when you're dealing with hyperspeed, in which case people are moving at, you know, greater than the speed of light, going fast is not as important as how having computers that can kind of handle those levels of calculation. So maybe this portal gun, as it overheats, becomes more likely to pull in more dangerous dimensions. And so it keeps you from kind of relying on it, you know, constantly jumping between dimensions, because it just makes worse and worse decisions, or it's unable to locate the safe dimensions as accurately as it would if you had given it some time to recharge.
I mean, that's cool. I also want to like address the Alex's father issue of like the game kind of ends with, oh, her dad's dead. What if the, cause there's giant, the giant slugs kind of coming through the window, right?
Let's see. Yeah, there's these kind of, all I remember from the end of Half-Life 2 episode 2 is this, these like three-legged dog walker things.
Yeah, they kind
of bust
in.
Things that would walk
in
a dog, but things that, you know.
Yeah, I like the idea of those things maybe having an alternate intention, that we find out the sort of things that like took him, maybe our access to another dimension. Maybe you're going to find him because he's, or he's visiting you from some other plane of existence, some other dimension, and kind of knows the key to like stomping out the oppressive government and like giving you the key to like unlock the rebellion and finally like free mankind. And maybe freeing mankind means exterminating mankind, you know, who knows?
There's aspects, there, I think there's dialogue in Half-Life 2 with the, and I don't remember the name of the aliens that become friendly in that one. It starts with a V, but I'm not gonna remember off the top of my head. They give some background.
Vortigaunts?
Yeah, that's the one, the Vortigaun, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They give some background on the Combine, or, you know, kind of whatever greater alien power is empowering them, that they have dealt with them on their own planet, and that is why they're seeking refuge on Earth. And so you get this idea that not only is this alien threat kind of traveling through time, or traveling through space rather, is traveling through dimensions and kind of, you know, what does it want with all these different creatures and different dimensions? And maybe it is trying to kind of collect life and create a perfect dimension, like a good afterlife. It wants the very best of everything. And so ultimately its intentions are good and it's creating something good, but it's leaving so much destruction in its wake in the dimensions that it deems to be suboptimal, that you're kind of left with a more interesting and nuanced moral perspective of, you know, do you prevent the creation of a great dimension because it is wreaking havoc on your own, almost like a colonialized society, you know? It's like, you know, do you fight for your own country, or do you try to get in good with the colonizers, you know?
I don't remember the name of the sort of spiky place that is the dimensional place that they discovered. But essentially, I feel like everything you need to know about the end of any series is always by looking at the beginning of every series. And I like the idea of Gordon being like maybe reawakened at the end of this rebellion to like somehow he was gone, or he went away, or maybe he died or something, and somehow he's awake again, and we find out that he is a dimensional being who's being like cast into the mortal plane over and over by the interdimensional species. And you know, just throughout time, as things start to go wrong, or that place is at risk, that it kind of spawns itself a Gordon Freeman to stir up some distraction for the otherwise nefarious Black Mesa scientists.
I will say that I tend not to like chosen one type scenarios. I like more kind of, you know, the uprising of regular people to try to become more than they are. You know, it's kind of like, I like the Matrix 1 more than I like the Matrix 2 and 3. Not the only reason, of course, but, you know, I think it's just more interesting when it's.
But the other ones have more bullets, H. Don't you understand?
That's true. Yeah, you convinced me. Matrix 3 is probably the best movie.
It's probably the best one.
Anyways, we've gone over time on this one. So
okay, fair enough.
Let's leave that one to the community. And we've thrown some ideas out there. I don't know if we come up with a consistent direction just yet, but I think that's about as much Half-Life 3 as we're ever going to get. So,
H, if you want to cancel our next like four episodes of pitches and just replay Half-Life 1 and 2 and then really spend a few hours breaking down what we would do, I am game for that. It's
that would be interesting as like a special type thing to get into the minutia of what Half-Life 3 should contain.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, yeah, we can think about that. We can think about all kinds of specials. And if you have any suggestions for those, then of course you can write in and tell us what you'd want to hear. That came from Poditis. I think calling it Half-Life 3 is fine.
Easiest named game yet.
There we go. thank you, Poditis, for submitting that. If you, the listener, would like to submit something else, then you can do so at playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
And while you're headed into 2019, why don't you go ahead and download Blue Noise? It is Protodome's album featuring our theme song. Oh my God. How can you tell I'm out of practice? Featuring our theme song, Hello World, off of it. It's a very good piece of music and it's a really good album. I listened to the whole thing actually this past week and a banger.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like, Protodome's music. It is Protodome and Callum Bowen are like the indie game composer, chiptune-y type folks that, I am always excited when I see their names on a project. So, yeah, good stuff. I like it. I guess I'll take us out with a miniature pitch today. What I wanted to see, I've been playing Accounting Plus in the last few days. You know, I've had it on my computer for a long time. I wasn't able to fully play it before, but a recent compared to when I first played it, patch, fix some of the problems that I was having with it, and I ended up having a great time. And what I want to see now is a VR game where you are actually doing accounting. What would that look like?
And our failing business guy can visit you. How about that?
There we go. We'll see you next week.
Bye.